Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that celebrates one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us back in the VIP tent this week is Major Max Romero. Hi, Max.
Hey, Rob. You can't see it, but I'm saluting you.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm also in a dress. I need to get my Section 8, Rob.
Whatever you got to do, man. You know. Well, this is awesome. Thank you for coming back, Max. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Rob. This is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, you can tell me what the other ones are off here, but okay. anyway, since you've been on the show before, we went over your secret origin with MASH. So let's get right to the episode at hand, which is Season 1, Episode 21, Sticky Wicket. Original air date, March 4th, 1973. Written by Lawrence Marks, Larry Gelbart, and Richard Baer. And directed by Don Weiss. During surgery, Frank is particularly snippy and clumsy, and Hawkeye is less able to laugh it off, at one point throwing an instrument at him in frustration. Later, in the mess tent, Frank asks Hawkeye why he was so tough on him, and he lets Frank have it. He's a bad surgeon, constantly requires other people's help, is nasty to the staff, and a pain in the gluteus maximus. Trapper and Ugly John concur. Hot Lips gets so mad at them that she demands Henry do something about it, and he calls Hawkeye to his office while Hot Lips is there. Henry says the camp's morale is down because of the blow-up in the mess tent, and Hawkeye has to try and patch it up by publicly apologizing. Hawkeye isn't having any of it and walks out. Later, back in surgery, Hawkeye really busts his butt over one patient, Private Thompson. He survives the surgery, but seems to be getting sicker with a temperature of 101 degrees. In the mess tent, Hawkeye can't understand what's going wrong with this patient, and Frank chooses this moment to needle him. After letting go with, "Well, I haven't killed anyone this week, how about you?" Hawkeye leaps over the table to throttle him. The fight is broken up by Trapper and the rest. Hawkeye is so disturbed over this patient that he camps out in the bed next to him and gets so annoyed by the poker game in the swamp that he moves out. He tries to get some peace and quiet in the supply tent, but a constant stream of interruptions, a nurse he has a date with, Trapper, the delivery of a kitchen sink, drives him nuts. Henry arrives and asks whether Hawkeye is going through all this because he's really worried about the patient or his ego. Hawkeye just doesn't like the idea of one of his patients not getting better. Finally, something occurs to Hawkeye, and he gets Hot Lips out of bed in the middle of the night to assist in another surgery for Thompson. Turns out a piece of shrapnel moved and slipped behind the sigmoid colon, causing a small tear, something even the best surgeons could have missed. Frank, observing, says, "Anyone could have missed that," which Hawkeye takes as a peace offering. He thanks Frank, and the relative peace at the 477th is restored. So, Max, why did you want to talk about this one, Sticky Wicket?
I wanted to talk about this one because this is a really interesting episode in two ways. For one thing, it's very heavy on the medicine. Mm-hmm. It really revolves around a surgery and how difficult the situation was that these surgeons were working in. But it also throws around a lot of medical terms. It throws because everything is depending on the patient's condition, which is worsening, and they're all trying to figure it out. And it's interesting to see these doctors and nurses who we usually see in a casual, comedic kind of light. It's interesting to see them being doctors and nurses. You know, it adds that kind of I hate to use this word. It lends that gravitas to this episode. And it's also interesting in the way that it portrays Hawkeye in a less than heroic light. He's not particularly funny. He is arrogant. He is very sure of himself, doesn't want to listen to anybody else. And in the meantime, he has a patient who could potentially die. And to see him under that kind of pressure, both the pressure of potentially losing a patient, but also, I think, kind of wrestling with the idea of how good a surgeon he really is a very interesting aspect to see, especially in a first season episode.
Yeah, I mean, Sticky Wicket is not a particularly famous episode of the show, but it is kind of landmark for the reason you talk about, and that it's the first episode that they've done that just follows a medical case from the beginning to the end. They would do that in later seasons, but this was really the first one where they simply took one patient, or one problem with a surgeon the surgeon is having, and followed it all the way through the episode. And you have to, of course, just trust the show that they're giving you the correct information, because there's no way you can know what's wrong. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the shrapnel did go behind the sigmoid colon. Sounds good to me. I have no idea. But, I mean, they would do that later on. But this was really the first one to do that. It was kind of like the way Dear Dad was the first one to establish, like, the letter writing motif. This was the first time they did that, where they're like, okay, we're just going to – I mean, you could transplant this – no pun intended – transplant this story to, you know, Medical Center or Trapper John MD or any of these other shows, except the, you know, the setting's different. But it's that same idea. And I really – I agree with you about that. Hawkeye is not terribly likable in this one. And much like the episode we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Sometimes You Hear the Bullet, this episode has a great moment for Henry Blake, because he gets – McLean Stevenson gets to be the elder statesman and come in and kind of read Hawkeye the Riot Act gently. But he's sort of like, now what are you – you know, are you really that upset about the patient, or are you upset that it's your patient? And that's a that's a neat angle. It's something I hadn't really – would not have occurred to me before this. I was like, oh, yeah, Hawkeye is a brilliant surgeon, but he also knows he's a brilliant surgeon. Right. So when a patient is going south, that damages his ego a little bit. So that's, again, another nice quiet moment for Henry Blake.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's in my notes. Is McLean Stevenson, of course, national treasure, but also this episode is filled with great little moments of acting. And in a way, I feel like this episode kind of turns a corner for MASH. Because McLean Stevenson gets this wonderful scene where he's talking to Hawkeye, and you see him both as a more than competent doctor, but also as a pretty good leader. You understand why he was put in charge of this MASH unit and why it's the best, you know, of the units. And, you know, Henry is a big part of that. And it always kind of seems like, oh, he's just letting them run him ragged, and they just kind of step all over him. But things are getting done, and a lot of what that is, I've had jobs where the managers are not great, or you have a really good one. And one thing I've noticed about the good ones is that they kind of let people do their job, but they step in when necessary.
Right.
And that's what Henry does. And he does it in a really no-nonsense way, which is kind of striking considering – you know, the show up to this point.
Right. I've mentioned this in episodes already, where actors who I sometimes think, if you see actors in a lot of bad material, I think it's a natural thing to assume that that actor is maybe not great, because you're just like, you kind of associate them with just bad stuff. And of course, after MASH, McLean Stevenson really never did much. Didn't do a whole lot that was notable, let's say. Let's be charitable. and you know, he did Hello Larry, which was like a in the 70s and 80s, like a pop culture punchline for bad TV shows. Johnny Carson particularly loved to make fun of Hello Larry, because it was just like it was code for bad show.
Yeah,
and McLean Stevenson made a pretty fatal career decision leaving the show. So it's easy to think of him as like, oh, that guy's kind of lame, but he is tremendous as Henry Blake. And so you're like, well, okay, when he was given the right material, he could kill it. He just wasn't given the great material most of the time. But when you hand him something like this, he rises to the occasion. And yeah, it's Henry Blake is, you think of him more as a contemporary of Hawkeye and Trapper, at least compared to later on.
Right.
But nevertheless, he is older and he has seen more. And when he has to step in and kind of get Hawkeye out of his funk, he's able to do it. And I love that they gave that moment to that actor. I think it's great. By the way, I love the detail that we see the sweater that McLean Stevenson has, which is his from his, I guess, University of Illinois. And it's a blue sweater with an orange eye. And then he has a mug where the colors are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that detail that he has the matching sweater and mug set. I think that's great.
Yeah. And you know, another thing I really liked about McLean Stevenson in this episode in particular was you know, throughout the episode, he's trying to get some sleep, right? He just wants to get some sleep. And he just looks so burned out every time. And when Radar comes to tell him that, you know, he's Radar has won a lot of money in the
poker game. $803 in
$803, right.
Which, by the way, would be over $7,000 today. So I could see why you'd want to hide that. That's
right?
A lot of money.
I know. For me, $803 is still a lot of money. So he goes to Henry to take care of this money. And he takes care of it by putting it under his pillow. But he's kind of sleepy and kind of just burnt out. But when Radar mentions that Hawkeye has moved out of the swamp, he perks up and he says, "Wait, what?" Because he knows that that's a problem. And it's just a great little bit of acting. And another moment that I really liked was actually with Loretta Swit when they are right when they have the blow up in the mess tent between Hawkeye and Frank. Frank is rising to the bait. You know, he's taking it. Hawkeye
is such a dick.
Yeah, and when Hawkeye is just letting him have it, you know, you can see that Frank is stung by it. But Margaret has this look on her face like, oh my God, she can see what Hawkeye is doing. Mm-hmm. She can see how he's basically bullying Frank in a sense. And just that little bit of acting without saying anything, I think is a hallmark of something that Loretta Swit would bring to MASH, especially in later episodes as they kind of just fleshed her character. And it's really nice to see that that little bit come through.
Absolutely. I mean, if I was doing this in a more sort of spreadsheety style, I would actually have like a list of great reactions by Loretta Swit, which where she doesn't have any dialogue, but she is filling in that scene, that moment, because the moment where Frank says, "Well, I haven't killed anybody this week. How about you?" Margaret looks horrified. Like she looks at Frank like she's mad at him because she knows he's gone too far. And it's such an easy thing to miss because, of course, you're looking at the actor who's speaking. Mm-hmm. You're not looking at her. But I love that that informs us about her character that, she's on Frank's side and she's always the antagonist along with Frank. But right. She knows that's too far. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that. I think that's – and I feel like that is such a – like, that's unappreciated by the – you know, people don't appreciate the actor enough that they're doing something like that. And there are other episodes I will get to where I noticed that Margaret – that Loretta Swit threw in this little reaction that nobody else would be looking at unless, of course, you're like me and you've watched this episode for 5,000th time. And you're looking around in the corners of the set for other things you might have missed. But, yeah, I think that's a great – I love that detail. I think it's great that we know that, okay, they're Frank and Hotlips are definitely a team, but she's not as bad as he is, of course, and she would soften over time. So I thought that's great.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was planned. I mean, I don't know how much planning you can actually do in serial television, but it's Margaret's character arc is my absolute favorite in MASH. Because she develops so much as a person as the show continues on. And with that hindsight, you can really kind of see these bits of her personality starting to develop.
Yeah, that's true. The very first thing I noticed when I watched this episode, and I don't know if you did, Max, but like this episode features the theme song is like a different arrangement of Suicide is Painless, which is – it's like a jazz arrangement. It's very strange. They would only use it for two episodes, this and the next one. But it's like, you know, yeah, baby, Suicide, yeah. And I'm like, what is this? Why is Dean Martin been brought in to sing Suicide is Painless? What's happening? I don't understand. It's
especially
very
weird. Well, it's kind of a heavy episode. I mean, it's –
yeah, I know.
It's a weird choice.
Swing, baby. Suicide is painless. It brings on a lot of changes. Yeah, like what's happening? It features that moment of early on where Hawkeye and Trapper make fun of Radar for his height and the amount of food that he eats, and that always makes me uncomfortable. Like, it's nice that they've established that the officers and the enlisted eat together. There is no, there's no class system there. There's no class system there. And it's cool that Radar eats with the doctors because it establishes that he's – they treat him as an equal. But I also – as someone who was, picked on in school, watching Hawkeye and Trapper make fun of Radar just makes me very uncomfortable.
Right. But do you know what? That's an interesting thing too about Trapper because whether – Hawkeye starts going off about how it could be a symbol of a sign of repressed aggression.
Right.
Right? And he starts saying all these things. And as they're leaving, Trapper very, very quietly tells Radar, "Think about it. You know, just kind of like, I'm not making fun of you, but maybe you should look, you know, try to understand why you're doing this to yourself."
You know, I mean, I'm guessing that if you happen to like the food there, I guess you'd eat as much of it as you could. Well, you know, I can't, right. can't blame Radar.
He's a farm boy. You know, he's probably used to having to get those carbs and everything. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, I said if I was far away, I'd probably be sublimating my feelings with food as well. I don't know. The scene where the choppers arrive, I noticed that there is footage reused from the pilots.
Yeah.
Where we see that. That's kind of interesting. I don't know whether they just didn't want to bother to shoot new footage. I mean, of course, this was back in an era where these things were meant to be disposable. You watch the show and you never saw it again. Maybe you saw it in a rerun over the summer, but it was not meant to be watched over again. No one ever thought, oh, these are going to be on some sort of permanent digital format and people are going to inspect these things from them. But you can't help but notice. You're like, hey, it's those same nurses and it's those same people running up the steps. Like, what's going on there? So I don't know whether, again, this one was directed by Don Weiss, who did a bunch of other episodes of MASH. He did Cowboy, which we've covered previously. And so maybe they just didn't. They didn't have the footage or something. They ran a little short. Who knows? Who knows what happened there? He also directed episodes of Hawaii 5-0, TJ Hooker, Delta House.
Oh, wow.
Remembers Delta House, huh? Yeah. That's Animal House is a TV series. How could that fail?
Oh, wow. I had forgotten about that until just this moment.
Hill Street Blues. He died in 2000. And he also did a TV movie called 0 to 60 with Darren McGavin, which this is one of the ongoing things of the MASH cast, that I'm finding these amazing TV movies that I've never heard of with these cool casts. It sounds really – I want to see the 0 to 60 movie with Darren McGavin. And this episode was written by, as I mentioned, Lawrence Marks, who wrote a lot of really great episodes. There is one moment where I think Don Weiss tries to get a little fancy, and it's when they're working on the patient in the OR, and it's Hawkeye and Trapper and Ugly John. Mm-hmm. And there's a succession of three pull-ins on each of their faces.
Yeah.
And it's a little cheesy. It's very medical center, very Marcus Welby. I'm like, all right, Don Weiss, calm down. All right.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah. You're not used to like any sort of camera movement on MASH, but all of a sudden you're like, well, okay. Or they're a little much. The actor who plays the sick private is named Wayne Bryan. He has exactly one other credit on IMDb in 2005.
Oh, wow.
So he has no credits from 1973 and then until 2005. But then I looked at his bio, and it talks a lot about his work in the theater. So I think he's one of these guys who's mostly a theater actor. Somehow he landed in an episode of MASH.
Right.
But that's – I always wonder how you do that. Like, how if you didn't try to be in TV and you happen to land in MASH, like, it seems strange.
Yeah. Yeah, because I know there's – I don't know if it's so much anymore, but I know there used to be this divide between the theater actors and the TV and movie actors.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, 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 very strange. This episode is the penultimate episode for Ugly John. He'll do one more appearance, John Orchard as Ugly John, and then we never see him again. I like the line that Frank has at the end, which I mentioned, which is the anyone could have missed that. Mm-hmm. Where he actually tries to patch things up with Hawkeye. It's a rare moment where Frank is kind of a nice guy. You know, they wouldn't keep with that. But I like that moment that they gave him a couple extra shades of depth.
Right. Yeah, Frank is such an interesting character. He's such a weasel. He's such a jerk. And you can see why everybody would want to, you know, just pop him one on a daily basis. But, you know, he has these little flashes of, you can kind of see a person that he maybe wants to be and is angry that he can't be. I'm not sure, maybe I'm reading too much into Frank, but he's also later on when Margaret marries Donald Penobscot, you see some of these things come out, and it's the same thing with Margaret. It's kind of interesting to see these building blocks that the actors would use later on.
Yeah, there's an episode in season 3 where Frank talks to Trapper. I think it's the episode called OR, and Frank asks Trapper something to the effect of, why does everyone take an instant dislike to me? It's like, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
He can't figure out why he's a jerk. And, you know, the moment in the tent where he pushes Hawkeye too far It's just like, yeah, okay, Hawkeye mouthed off a lot, and now he has a patient that's going sour.
Right.
I could see why you'd want to take advantage of that. But you also have to know, Frank, that you are in no position to question Hawkeye right. Pierce's medical skills, because you are a terrible doctor.
And it's ugly. I mean, it is uncomfortable almost to watch. Because when yeah. he drops that last line about, I haven't killed anyone this week, how about you? My reaction was like, oh, no. That's,
yeah.
Oh, wow. That's hard. That's hard.
And that drives Hawkeye so mad that he actually physically attacks Frank, which is, you yeah. know, Hawkeye would only do that a couple of times. Sometimes for comedic effect, but that's how far they've pushed him. I kind of feel like this one, well, and I have no proof of this, it's just my hunch. This one feels a little bit like it was maybe shot earlier in the season and then played later. Because the whole thing with the blow up between Hawkeye and Frank, and it's sort of establishing where these characters fit within the swamp. It feels like this might have taken place a little earlier. I don't know. Am I reading too far into that?
No, it's possible. I mean, so many of these early episodes, especially, kind of were shuffled around. So, yeah, I mean, I can totally see that happening.
Yeah, it feels like this dynamic needed to be established earlier on, and maybe already was by later on in the season, and this one just happened to be shown out of order. Again, I have no proof of that at all. One of the things I constantly notice, of course, about these episodes is the anachronisms. Mm. And they mention Bonzo Goes to College, which was a movie that came out in 1952. So MASH was way ahead of the curve in terms of getting their movie releases. And they mention Bride of the Gorilla, which came out in 1951. Now, they mention the Bonzo movies a lot on MASH.
Right.
And I think partly, because it suggests that they aren't getting, like, A-grade material. You know, they're not being sent Casablanca. They're mm-hmm. getting Bonzo Goes to College. But I have to think that – think about when these episodes were made. These episodes were made in the 70s. Who was governor of California
right.
when MASH was being made? Ronald Reagan. And of course, Ronald Reagan starred in Bedtime for Bonzo,
mm-hmm.
something that people who wanted to make fun of Ronald Reagan never tired of mentioning, because it sort of always suggested what a hack actor he was, which isn't totally fair. He did a lot of very good movies, but he was in this monkey movie. And so I have to figure that the fact that they were constantly mentioning the Bonzo movies was a little dig at Governor Reagan's expense by Larry Gelbart. Because by then, Ronald Reagan he had switched parties. He had gone from Democrat to pretty hard right Republican.
Right. Yeah.
And back then, what counted as hard right.
yeah.
But
all
those days. But I have to figure that was Larry Gelbart or Gene Reynolds or whoever just sticking the knife in a little bit to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then Reagan became president while the show was still on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of crazy when you think about it.
Jokes on them, I guess.
yeah. What did you think of Alan Alda's acting in this episode?
I thought he's great. I mean, I think one of the things that, again, that this is good. This goes on throughout the series, is Alan Alda was able and had the lack of ego, I guess you would call it, or at the very least, the common sense to allow his character Hawkeye to be shown sometimes in an unfavorable light.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. That's not something that probably a lot of actors would have put up with. I hate to keep jumping ahead, but I look at MASH in sort of a mosaic kind
right.
of way. There's an episode later on, way, way later, like season 5, where Radar makes an errant comment about something, and Hawkeye makes a really snide response to him.
Yeah.
And they just let it go. And I'm like, wow, Hawkeye's kind of a dick in that moment. Well, it's because he's a person like everybody else. We all have our moments where we say something we regret. And I appreciate that Alan Alda was willing to do that. I could see, as the main actor, you might want to be like, no, I don't want to look that way. I don't want to look unpleasant. But no, I think Henry's theory is right, that Hawkeye's ego is wrapped up in this case just as much as he wants just to heal the patient.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and Alan Alda does a great job of bringing that out. And I think also as an actor, it probably was, I'm not an actor, I don't know, but I've known enough actors that, you know, I think they like to stretch their talents. They like to do different things. And I think, and you would know better than I would, but I think Alan Alda was kind of one of the people who was instrumental in making sure that MASH kind of blended drama with the comedy. And This episode is a really good vehicle for him to do that, because, like you said, he's not likable in this episode, and he's really just kind of a powder keg ready to go off because he's just so worried about this patient. But it also, like you said, a large part of it is also ego. He's worried about the patient, but he's also worried about failing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's worried about himself failing more than, well, not more, but as much as he is worried about failing the patient.
Yeah, he hasn't really faced this before, this kind of thing. That the scene that he has with Hot Lips on the grounds of the camp outside the tents, I mean to say, where she's suggesting things and he's like, no, impossible. And she keeps arguing, and he basically cuts her off by basically saying, you know, you're just the nurse. Yeah. I'm the doctor. And he goes, I know. And then she responds, well, you obviously don't. And there's this awkward silence, mm-hmm. and where it's like you realize that he knows that, and it's like she's able to say to him, well, you know, you keep telling everybody that you know, well, you obviously don't. And I like that moment, and he figures that out, so that's terrific too. And amidst all of this seriousness and the whole bit about where he's in the supply tent, they even find a way to work in one of the horriest jokes in the world, which is, you know, everybody's in here but the kitchen sink. Hey, what's that? Kitchen sink, sir. You know, like, that's such a, like, but I'm bum bum.
You know, I have to admit, I still laughed at it.
Me too. Yeah, yeah. The timing of it is perfect, where he's like, you know, everything we hear but the kitchen sink. Door opens. What's that? Kitchen sink, sir. It's just very good.
The only thing they needed to bring in was a snare drum so they could do that.
Yeah, right. They have Radar come in with he knows how to play the drums or something. The two last little details I have of this episode that I wanted to mention was they mention a Captain Phillips, presumably not the Tom Hanks character. They mention a Captain Phillips who, of course, we never see. We never see another captain at MASH. We don't know who this captain is. I thought it would have been really funny if they had mentioned Major Murdoch instead as their reference from Tuttle, just to throw that in. But, you know, hey, you know, what could he do? They weren't expecting these shows for people to be paying attention from episode to episode.
Right.
And then in the last segment of the show, the sort of button of the whole episode, we find out that Hawkeye named the swamp.
Yeah.
He says he called the – so we have a little bit of MASH history. He named the place. So, okay, we now know that the place is named thanks to Hawkeye.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I caught that. And I was like, oh, okay. I never –
a little bit of MASH history, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing that struck me as odd, and it's not even a big deal, but when they're working on Phillips the second time, Ugly John doing the anesthesia, Hawkeye operating, Margaret is assisting, and there's a fourth guy. There's a fourth person on the other side of the patient,
yeah,
with his back to the camera. And that kind of jumped out at me, because usually it's, you know, the surgeon and the nurse and the anesthesiologist, and that's it. So I was kind of like, who's that guy?
Yeah, sometimes they have these random people that just sort of wander in, and you're like, is that another doctor? I don't know. You know, like,
is that Captain Phillips? I don't know.
Maybe there's Captain Phillips. I have no idea. There is a moment in, again, I'm doing it again, I'm sorry, but there's a later episode where Hawkeye refers to another doctor, and the line is so shoehorned in that even Alan Alda can't sell it. And we when we watch that episode, we always make reference that line, because you're like, if Alan Alda can't sell it, it's a bad line.
Yeah.
But there's this moment where even, like, I think Alan Alda realizes, like, this is a cheat, because we're referring to a doctor we've never seen before. Like, what are you talking about? So, but yeah, overall, this is a really good episode, but it's just not a particularly famous one. It's not one you hear about, but it really does, kind of like sometimes you hear The Bullet, which was just four episodes earlier. This one straddles the drama and comedy quite well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's a really kind of a landmark episode. Do you have a favorite joke or favorite line from this one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course I do. And it's not the kitchen sink line, I promise.
Okay.
It's when Radar goes in to tell Henry, who's trying to get some sleep in, that Houlihan is on the warpath. And he's saying, no, I'm afraid. I don't want to tell her anything. I'm afraid of her. And he says, and she says she's going to go to I can't remember the name of the colonel.
General Clayton.
General Clayton. That she's going to go to General Clayton. And Henry very seriously looks at Radar and says, you go to Major Houlihan, look her straight in those cool killer eyes, and tell her I'll be right there. Oh, that's just, I love that delivery.
Right, because you think it's headed one way, and then at the very end, he buckles. So, yeah, that is good. It's a good delivery by McLean Stevenson again. This is it. He's got a lot of good moments in this one. Yeah, that is very funny, because he doesn't change his tone or change his – because he's looking Radar right in the eye, and you just think he's headed one way, and he's like, I'll tell her I'll be right there. Okay. Yeah. My favorite line is probably in the mess tent when Frank is taunting Hawkeye about the patient's lack of progress, and everybody tells him to quiet down, including Trapper, who says, Frank, why don't you let that cut under your nose heal? I absolutely love referring to someone's mouth as a cut under their nose. I use that to this day. I will say that to people. If somebody's really being noisy or saying something stupid, I'll just say, will you let that cut under your nose heal? Nobody ever knows what I'm talking about. They just don't get it, but I don't care. I use it anyway. I just think it's – there's something so dismissive about referring to their mouth as merely a cut under their nose. I find that very, very funny.
Yeah, it sounds so insulting.
Yeah, it's perfect. And you know, this is not an episode that Trapper gets a lot to do. So I'm glad that he at least got the line, gets that funny line. So, yeah, it's a really, really good episode. So, awesome. Well, Max, where can people find you on the internets?
They can find me at the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Hey, that's us.
Hey, that's you. That's us. What am I saying? The I do Plasticast, which is the podcast dedicated to Plastic Man. And I also do The Mirror Factory, which is a literary podcast. That's the best place to find me.
Absolutely. So, of course, if you want to listen to back episodes of MASHcast, go to the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Please leave comments. And we're always talking MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH477cast. So until Max, thank you so much for coming on, man. I always love talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And until next week, that is all.
Some poker tonight. I got the missus to send me a check made out to you just to make things easier.